what I do is I talk to a lot of folks in the YC program who've mm-hmm. come out of YC. You guys, at least you claim you're the best and the brightest. I don't really know if that's true. It's kind of seems like a lot of marketing, but
they take a big percentage.
Yeah, they take a percentage, send you on your way.
Yeah. And then you're on your own after the fact.
Yeah, no, I've met brilliant people from your program. It's been a lot of fun. We basically just plug into your website and then we look for cool stuff. And then we email you and then we fly to LA. We sit down and chill.
Yeah.
And it's a good deal. So you guys are class of 2022?
23. We just came out.
Fresh out of the batch into the real world.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you guys apply to YC with this financial automation tool? Or did you show up and do a little switcheroo? Because I've heard all sorts of variations.
Yeah, we had a business for about a year and a half before coming to YC. So a little bit different than most other founders, right, who come.
Well, you guys actually made money before you went to YC.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's a nice touch.
We never even knew it was possible to not
make money
and make money and have a business and just go raise capital without getting money.
Yeah, that's refreshing. So where are you guys from?
Colorado.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah.
Because if you were from California, you'd like be like, yeah, we don't need the whole like revenue thing.
We'd get it. Yeah. We were just a small town up in the mountains of Colorado.
Okay. Yeah. So for those who don't know, you can apply to YC with just an idea that hasn't been tested, that hasn't been proven, hasn't touched a single customer. And if you can use a little logic and a little bit of copywriting, you might get accepted in the program. Your credentials might suggest that you're a pretty smart character.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you guys show up with that actual revenue generating situation.
But we're like the black sheep.
Because you're one of the very few people that show up with that.
No, we don't come from like Ivy League schools, backgrounds, and like we're neither highly technical.
Thank God. That's why we get along.
Yeah. So most of all the other, our batch mates and companies that they bring in are just like half of them are just ideas.
Okay.
And they come from the big tech companies.
Yeah. Or the Stanford crowd.
Or that crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not in the Stanford crowd.
Yeah.
Cornell. Red. It's a huge step down. It's
our dad went there for architecture.
When you say our dad, everyone needs to know that you guys are
brothers.
Our brothers. Yeah. Yeah, this is the
first brother. Yeah,
our dad. Yeah, yeah, our dad. Can't just let that slide.
My dad and his dad are the same.
Are the same dad. Yeah. So a brother team, you show up with some revenue.
Yep.
You're not coming through this sort of Silicon Valley ideation thing, which I like. You've got skin in the game. Why did you decide to go into the incubator? Because you're like, oh, we're making money. Like, do you want to go there to just push the concept a step further? You like, I want to meet some cool people. We need strategic partners. What was the move when you guys?
Yeah, I think partially an advisor highly recommended it. And then also we figured that YC is the best badge you can have in the industry for SaaS, for software, for startups. Even if we did have revenue, I think it was a great thing for us to go through.
Because if you guys want to raise money someday, you're like, we got the little orange square on our LinkedIn that money falls out of the fucking sky.
That thing. Oh, and it did.
Crazy.
Because we raised money before we got to YC as well. And this second time around, we just closed around. Was
how much
a lot easier.
It was a smaller round.
Okay.
Just like a follow on for our pre-seed.
Okay.
But I think so the decision to actually go to YC, like Ian said, from our advisor was because we were gonna go out and raise capital.
Mm.
And with the YC deal, now they give you $500,000.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
No.
Give you $500,000. Yeah. Come and hang out for 2 months, right?
You can do a lot with that, especially if you're just coming in with an idea. But if you have a business and revenue and customers, you can really double down. So we're like, it's almost like a hedge of our bets. We're going to apply to YC, see if we get in.
Right.
And we're going to go out and start our pre-seed. We launched our pre-seed and then like 2 weeks later, we like oversubscribed. And then in that same week, we got into YC. It was like,
wow. Yeah, when it rains, it pours situation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So then we had to cut off the funding and go into YC.
Okay. You're like, no more money.
Yeah.
We were going to work now, guys. You could just keep your money in your pockets. you know, you did a night, you did a little Ace of Spades bottle popping to celebrate.
Yeah, exactly.
you were with Rick Ross in the club, letting it go.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah.
And then, so you enter YC. How old are you guys?
27, 29.
Okay. So you're kind of like, you're like mid range there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mid range.
Yep.
We've had some folks on the show that are like early 20s.
Yep.
And that they hadn't had any exposure to reality.
Yeah. Right.
Yet.
Yeah.
And so
fresh out of college or not even.
Fresh out of college.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like, hey, I guess we could raise money, or we could raise money and get like a kick-ass program, meet some new people, have some fun, learn a lot. And so you kind of know where to deploy the 500 grand.
Yeah. Well, that's where it's like, it's hard when we're working with our advisors and investors and mentors, because there you're at the 50,000 foot level and you're doing financial models for 3 years out. And then you get this thing that's like the founder vertigo, right? The next hour you get off of that meeting and you're back down with the customers, like in it, like understanding the minute problems that the software is having.
Right.
And then you're like on the next call, like you're back up at 50,000 feet.
Right.
Like that vertigo is really challenging, that we saw a lot of the first time founders, the people that didn't have ideas really like kind of boiled down to the nuts and bolts that came into YC, that they just ended up in pivot hell. And that was like,
explain pivot hell.
Yeah. It's where you have one idea that you think you can validate. You go to validate it. It doesn't make sense. Or someone else takes your idea beforehand. A bigger company takes your idea right before you're about to raise money or launch product. Then you have to turn around, switch gears, try something else. And a lot of times you go into an industry that you don't know very well, and you are thinking it's a cool idea, but you don't have the understanding or the experience that we may have beforehand, where we didn't experience the pivot hell aspect at all, where a few folks did and they went through it multiple times or five times. And I think it's part of some businesses' history, but
yeah,
I think we're excited that we haven't had to deal with it yet.
Well, and this pivot hell is on a public stage at YC.
Yep.
Meaning you have businesses that are publicly iterating back and forth in front of you.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, you're like, oh boy. I mean, one of the things that I get a lot of DMs about is like, hey, I have this great idea, Nick. If you'll just give me 5 minutes, meaning they're already withholding the idea from me.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, that's a no, no matter what. Like you're already withholding the idea from me. So I can't even, I need to stop my day. Now I need to talk to you about, no, right? So it's just a no. So anyway, don't do that, guys. That's really annoying. Yeah. Okay. It's really annoying. I'm not going to steal your idea. Like there's 0% chance I'm going to steal your idea.
And no one's really going to steal
your idea. No one's going to steal your idea. Here's why. Because when you think you have a really great idea and it has not been tested in any way, shape or form, that means you haven't shown it to anyone, surveyed. You're not even telling some random guy on Instagram about it, right? You have no clue how complicated it is to pull that idea off, or if you even have it, it's crystalline as you need. Mm-hmm. And then what you've done is you haven't gotten started. You've delayed the process.
Yep.
And let's pretend you really bought into your idea and you drank your own Kool-Aid. You go to a program like YC and you've convinced some higher ups that they believe in this idea too. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is when the rubber meets the road, so to speak, you find that, oh shit, this thing doesn't even work.
People don't like it.
People don't even like it.
Yeah.
And so on one hand, it's like, you know, you could hear this and say, oh man, that's so discouraging. It's like business so hard. It's like, no, it's actually, to me, it's motivational, because it's like, go out and do it now. You know, don't do it when you think you have the perfect moment, when you're on the stage of YC and when you're surrounded by the most elite young entrepreneurs and thinkers potentially in the United States and abroad. It's like, just do it now when nobody's looking, because you're gonna save yourself a lot of trouble, a lot of hassle. And you know what? I'd rather you be someone like InBuild and showing up with a business, meaning a business is something that earns revenue or creates some kind of value.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's not a business. Showing up with a business and refining that And then you get to take that 500 grand and it's like rocket fuel. Because otherwise, 500 grand, you know what 500 grand is? It's just fucking runway and burn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't have your idea.
And pressure.
And pressure.
Huge amounts of pressure.
Yeah. So do you guys send out like a newsletter to, do you have like an investor newsletter where you guys say, hey, this is what we're doing. This is how much. Yeah. Do you have a section of your newsletter where it says how much runway you have?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me through that. Why do you... What could stress you out more than putting the runway bullet point on the end of your newsletter? And I'm sure it's at the end.
Yeah. I mean, it allows for them
the,
to...
It's the end of the metrics, which is at the top.
Okay.
It allows for the investor to really understand what they're investing in, mm-hmm. as well as the strength of your business, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you'll have a shorter runway eventually. You'll get there. But today, they want to know how much time you can go.
Before you die.
Before you die.
Yeah.
And it's always a death. I mean, you're always on a death march eventually, but like it just extends it more and more as you,
right.
as you increase that.
And that's where a lot of these other founders that were in our batch that were going through pivot hell, they were seeing that runway get shorter and shorter and not have an actual idea that's going to be turning into a business because the whole idea of YC is quickly and as iteratively as possible. Create a product that somebody wants. And once you spend all this time, like for a whole month, like working your ass off to really build something that you can show to somebody who would pay for it, then you realize nobody wants to pay for it. You cut off that idea, you pivot, meaning you just choose another idea.
Back to the drawing board.
Yep. And now that whole month, let's say we have 36 months of runway. Well, you just wasted a month.
Yeah.
Now you only have 35. And then you go through that the second month and then you go through pivot again.
And how does your emotion, how do you feel as time is running? It's like, it's almost like being on a bicycle and just being forced to ride towards a cliff.
Yeah.
And just like,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
it's nice from our perspective because we were just like trying to give them advice, trying to help them out.
Right.
Like we would constantly see, people just going into a room coding for months and then coming out with something and then realizing nobody wanted it. When we're like, well, the approach that we took was like, we went around to every single general contractor's office.
And tell me like, about how you start. What is the way that you ideated and had contact for InBuild? Like, how did you?
Yeah. So, I mean, we can take it back to like early days.
Take it back to the glory days. take it way back.
We used to sell. So I remember this story every time. We used to sell lemonade, right? As like little like 7 year old
Seriously.
Kids, right? Yeah. Okay. 7, 8 year old. We go out on the, we'd make some lemonade, stir it up, go out on the corner, sell lemonade to like random passerbys, right?
Okay.
Like community members and stuff. And then one day, this lady,
But we're from Aspen, we're from Colorado,
It's legit.
So we have like
people in BMW,
lemonade. And they're like, "Oh, three glasses of lemonade. Here's $100."
Right.
So we got hooked pretty quickly.
Yeah, you're like, this is a pretty good business.
Yeah. But the one time, this lady pulls up in like a pink convertible.
Perfect.
Not lie, like a Barbie convertible.
Okay.
And she walks over, gives us $100. She wants two glasses of lemonade. And you're just like, yes, that's the best thing you've ever seen, right? Yeah. And you're a young kid, whatever. But you turn around and you buy more lemonade powder.
Sure.
And you want to get that feeling, right?
Right.
But I think it really comes from wanting to help make people's lives easier and really change an industry that's inundated with outdated software. And all of that. I mean, Ty has more experience in the construction space in general. I come from more of a software background, so that's kind of my aspect. But Ty kind of saw the pain points that they're experiencing, and there's a lot of challenges that they face. Right.
Builders.
Yeah. Home. Of all sorts.
So the two of you guys, you're basically, all right, let's join forces because I understand the software side. You understand what the builders are going through to pull off these projects, which are... a lot of financial modeling exercises.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah. My original job was to do like software onboarding.
Okay.
So procurement.
Yep.
Or a luxury home builder in Aspen.
Okay.
And then 3 months into me starting to work there, I was going around, driving to all the job sites, working with all the project managers, getting them onboarded onto this new software, this shiny software that they wanted to use. And it was more like project management. And then the accountant, she'd been there for about 2.5 years or so. I didn't know that she was like on her way out, but like 3 months in, she retired. And the bookkeeper who was taking her spot, she a month later had her second child. So she went out on maternity leave. And that was the whole financial end.
You're like, cool, there's nothing left. There's no one left.
Yeah. And essentially the owner and president was like, now this software should be able to run the whole finances, right? You're ready.
You're like, you guys are ready to go out.
And I was like, well, you didn't realize like this is mainly a project management software. Right. They have some financial stuff, but
you're like, you realize that this doesn't actually do anything, right?
Yeah.
this is like a spreadsheet that kind of works.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's a very expensive, glorified spreadsheet.
Okay. And so what happens next?
And then
you go through it was a lifetime of hell trying to make it work.
It was basically, so how home building at that scale works.
We're talking about what? How many million dollar projects?
Yeah. So we were doing about 15, like 8 to $12 million projects.
Okay. So some sweet cribs.
Some sweet cribs. Yeah. Sweet. And a multifamily apartment complex.
Okay.
So there was a lot going on.
And the risks are higher and the variables are wider ranging, right?
Yep. And it's a smaller, very like high net worth town, but that's very hard to get people on like the low of like data entry type of positions.
I mean, you can't even get someone to do the job, is what you're saying.
Yeah. No. I mean, I ended up hiring two different people that would quit
in 5 minutes
later. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, this sucks. I'm going to go back to skiing and being awesome in Aspen. Exactly.
Or they figure out embezzle money from you because they're like just smart enough to like cook the books a bit, but get away with it for a while.
Oh my God.
Because oversight's not there. Owner doesn't really know what's happening.
In the home building.
It happens all the time. Yeah. Because like the owner doesn't have like visibility into the financials. Bookkeeper's just taking a bit off the top.
One of our earliest customers, they caught the accountant doing that.
Are you serious?
And they're like, we need your software to have the accountability.
So you're seeing these luxury homes, $15 million homes. There's all of these, there's hundreds of line items. There's all the complexity to get it built, not to mention a pull off the thing without being upside down on the project.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And the people that are helping out these projects are scraping little bits, not probably good amounts of money over the long run. You probably pull $100,000+ out before someone sees.
Oh, oh yeah. That's what happened to one of our clients.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you're watching not only the complexity of this,
you're
also watching people stealing money from the project.
Yep.
And nobody even knows about it until it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And then the negligence part where that was the biggest like hurdle of my job was we're on these cost plus type of contracts for all of our builds.
Okay. Explain that.
Which means like there's two types. There's either the cost plus, which means everything that it actually costs to build the
project. Like, hey, we're going to keep a tally of the wood, the marble.
Yep.
The other stuff.
Yeah. And then we're like
nails.
General contractors are essentially just management over the project and the subcontractors.
Okay.
So they work with thousands of different specialty subcontractors.
So you're basically managing the plumbing, the electrician, the sound guy.
Yep.
The pool guy. And I'm running out of guys.
They all just email
the
in.
Floor guy. See, I'm prepared for this. I am prepared for this. The floor guy, I'm not done. The stairs guy.
Yeah, there's no way there's a stairs guy.
All the guys.
There's a stairs guy?
Oh, yeah.
All right, sweet.
I mean, in one of the houses, there was...
I'm going to drop the mic on that one.
There was two airplane hangar doors over the indoor-outdoor pool.
So this is like
next level.
I got to come party with you guys in Aspen. Yeah. This is bullshit. I don't know why. I'm in Miami. Definitely it's like, it seems like the little leagues compared to this. Yeah. There's no airplane hangar doors.
Yeah.
Here's the difference, right?
Yeah.
You can sit in your room And you can come up the greatest, most amazing idea on your own. Mm-hmm. And then when you take it out into reality, which is more complex than you could ever understand, that's why you have to literally test things because you have no idea what's actually happening. And you can miss or you can hit. You can hit. There's been some major league hits out there, usually complete accidents.
Yep.
Meaning you go to create a Facebook for all your friends so they can talk to each other and it ends up becoming like it's a total accident. You didn't know you were going to do that, right? And you guys are like, I am witnessing embezzlement. I am witnessing financial shit show of the highest order, millions of dollars unaccounted for, line items, thousands of contractors. Mm-hmm. When did you finally say, hey, bro, let's do something about this, man? And when did that happen? Where were you guys? Take me to the place where it happened.
Yeah, so I was actually living in Denver at the time before COVID hit, right? Mm-hmm. COVID hit, Denver became a really boring, terrible place to be because there's not much to do. You couldn't leave your house, right? Lockdown. And I moved back up to the hometown, right? So we grew up in Aspen, lived there for a while, lived in Front Range, so in Colorado for most of my life. But anyways, was down there, moved back up to Aspen for COVID for a bit.
You guys end up back together. In the family house?
In the family house. So it was like this like quick intermission. We're like, all right, we're going to pop back there.
Right.
See what we can do. And then we'll like move on.
But did you know when you were going back to the family house for COVID that you guys were going to start a company? Or you're just like,
absolutely not.
You're like, I got to get out of here. This is boring as hell. We might as well go back to Aspen.
Yep.
You know, and chill.
And then when he was there.
And you're like, hey, man, what are you up to?
Yeah.
There's people embezzling from these homes and this is a shit show. And I have no idea how to work this spreadsheet.
Yeah. And it was then, more just like we started getting computers all set up in the basement and like programming so we could then just speed up the process.
Okay.
Because at that point, the bookkeeper that I had hired, she was working in the house. So Ian was working for the San Francisco based company at that point. She would come in and work right next to me.
Uh-huh.
And
so you basically had this like little melting pot happening at your home.
Yeah.
Where you're seeing what each other is doing.
Yeah. And then she quit and I was like, can you help? And we're like,
I think the funniest time he comes back with a box of checks and envelopes and he's like, I need help with these. I was like, what do you need help with? He's like, fill the checks and put stamps on them. Like,
no.
And I help him do it with a couple of checks, probably like the full box. Oh. And I got to the end of the full box and I was like, I'll never do that again.
Ever again.
For you. Nope. I'll never do that for you again.
No, that's not a human.
That was like kind of it. And he's like a couple more weeks went by. Ty like thought about it more. And then he came back to me. He's like, let's just try something. Like let's just try to build a small algorithm to like automate these like spreadsheets.
Okay.
Because Ty had built out a bunch of spreadsheets and was trying to like figure out how to automate the flow. Super simple algorithms to build. I mean, nothing crazy.
Uh-huh.
And we like built something that was pretty slick. And I'm like, ooh, this is kind of cool. And then we started talking to a bunch of people. Like we hired a friend of ours who was an intermediary between different jobs. And she was like, just looking for something to do.
Huh.
So we called 3,000 general contractors. Wow. To like vet the idea, really? Because we were like
3,000 general contractors.
Yep, mm-hmm. Across the U.S.
All right, how's that for a research assignment?
Yeah, it's great. Like it's intense. We're gonna
spend time and our money.
Yeah, you want to make doubly, triply, 3,000 times sure that you're on the right track.
I mean, it started out by we know what this one home builder that I was working for does.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's walk around and
make sure everybody else is as screwed up as the
yeah, exactly.
First guy.
And luckily in Aspen, there's 50 home builders and their offices aren't too far. And we can go and walk into their office and say, what's your process?
Uh-huh.
And then, okay, everyone does it the same way. They all use spreadsheets. They all
and
use
everyone hates
QuickBooks.
It.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And everyone is like, the only reason they're even talking to you is because you might save their headache from happening again today. When they have to manually do bullshit and they have to cross-reference and play with their little macros that break every 5 minutes. They're like, finally, someone is here to save us.
They give you a hard time at the same time, though. They're like, you don't want to automate this. You're like, I don't really like believe you, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah,
you've been doing
places
it
where you go in and there's just filing cabinets. like never ending amount of filing cabinets, and just they're just constantly printing just all these invoices and receipts. They're like, we need to keep it for 7 years.
Right.
I mean, because they have like a couple of our customers have been sued by their clients.
Yeah.
Because you need to supply all the supporting documentation.
Right.
And there's thousands of invoices.
Why would you bother digitizing that? You should just have thousands of file cabinets.
Exactly.
Ready to just light on fire.
You can find all the
stacks of paper
at your fingertips, right? You just have to just, you know
the
where
the library is the most underrated.
The wrong setup. Type of
stacks. Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah. You know, this is just one of those things because you think, you know, everything's been done. There's no opportunities out there. You know, I'm never going to make my mark. It's like you walk into a general contractor and he has 100 rows of fucking filing cabinets. Yeah. And you're like, I wonder if there's an opportunity here. Oh, wait, you have to save all this paper for 7 years? What? Like, dude,
for sure.
That's not even like the robots and computers will have already taken us over and killed us by them.
Yep.
Like there's no reason
for
you to have all this paperwork.
No reason. And you talk to someone, they're like, but AI is going to take my job. And you're like, it is eventually one day.
And for good reasons. So you don't have to open another freaking filing cabinet.
By that point, we're all going to be taken over.
Or like fat finger a key and miss $100,000 on this draw, you know, and then get sued. Yeah. Like that's why it's going to take your job.
Right.
Because your job is to just look at the bigger picture to make sure you're bringing in more business, doing the relationships.
Yeah.
And not the data entry that you might feel comfortable doing.
Yeah, please. Here's the thing. My argument, and I've said it a million times, is, and I'm going to say it again in my upcoming book, AI takes the jobs that you don't want anyway, first, period. Okay. So of course it's going to sneak its little sneaky behind up and take some probably pretty sweet jobs. But right now it takes the jobs that you don't want to do.
Right.
I'm pretty sure like nobody wants to be the filing cabinet guy. Like,
no,
sorry. Like we are creative species.
Yep.
We walk around outside and look at the leaves and breathe in the fresh aspen air. Like there's no time for being in a filing cabinet looking for invoice number 8,692. Please, that's not human. Let's let a robot do it. So you guys start out basically creating some automation. And at what point does our little friend, the robot start to enter in build and start to have some logic and AI entering your system? Recently?
That was probably actually fairly early on. I would say like our fifth customer or so. So like how it works is we plug into all of their email accounts.
Okay.
So
give me an idea.
The problem that we were seeing was all these softwares are great that are out there.
Yeah.
Once all the data is in there and you've done all the upkeep and like you come back from vacation and you're fresh and like you can get caught up and that's a perfect world, which it never happened.
Right.
No.
But the thing that's just overwhelming is your email and that these subcontractors that might be working on one job is emails the project manager and the project manager, he never checks his email.
Right.
And when I text him like on the first night of the month when we have to get all the pay applications to the clients out, then he doesn't go back and he doesn't find that invoice from the plumber. So he never sends it to the GC. The plumber never gets paid because it was sent to the wrong person.
And there's just these human errors that start to stack and compound.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we plug into all of their email accounts. And then once we started receiving, we're like, oh, now what have we done? We have millions of emails that we have to start digesting. Okay, now we need to bring in the robots.
Because what you're doing with all of this data, you're assuming who's who, who's the plumber, who's the stairs guy is the official word for that guy
stairs guy.
And deciding what's happening, if there's a transaction that's happening. And so you can approximate this with some kind of comfortable error-ish range or have some manual checkoffs. How do you do that? Tell me about your proprietary technology. No, because I'm always curious about this. Number one, because I always want to plug into people's emails.
Yeah.
Simply because if I were to be able to do that, I can start to like, I guess like make decisions for you and start to think like you and talk like you. And maybe become you, you know, don't be afraid.
Is that what you, that's your,
well, I have an AI company and it's, hey, this show isn't about my AI company. It's about your AI company. Yeah. No, but there's just, the pain has to be so strong for someone to turn over something like their email box, which if I was in this position, you would have my emails in 24 hours. I'd be like, yeah. And this checks out because the pain is so high. And the error if something goes wrong is monumental. Mm-hmm. So
also it extracts the documents from the email, right? We're working on kind of extracting more information from the actual body of the email, but today we're just capturing extracted documents.
Because there's all sorts of detachments and PDFs.
Links and the spam that comes in. Oh, like you gotta make sure you
and then it write that out. Pixelates the documents, right? To allow for easier translation and comprehension by the machine, right? So you've built out a process that captures the data, whether it's in an area or a type of data, right? It then reiterates that into the specific aspects that the customer can view and then approve the document.
So there's a queue, an approval, some kind of approval queue.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then each time you approve this type of data in this position, it then becomes more intelligent to capture that sort of information
again
for that field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like OCR and technology.
That is a little something called machine learning.
Yes.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yep. It's, hey, we're going to make a guess. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to tell me if I did it good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's over time, that's what we've been able to do with our interface is just have a very simple user flow for our customers to correct the data. Because it's financial information, it's very important that it's accurate. And the way that we train our AI is through our customers because they're used to doing the data entry. But if we can make it 10 times faster, and now instead of them entering the data, they're just cross-referencing and double-checking the data. A lot quicker to do, but then it trains our models to be better. So we see within the first 60 days or so of a customer getting onboarded, the AI gets significantly more accurate into the high 98, 99% of
them. So there's kind of like this curve where it's just like, whoop, and all of a sudden, boom, you've had saturation or you've had enough training where it's making some good guesses.
Exactly. Human in the loop.
Okay. Yeah. How do you keep people invested for that first 60 days?
Money back guarantee.
Money back guarantee.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Seriously. Yeah. If they use it for 60 days and they don't like it, then all your money's back. But they
churn proof, baby.
Yeah.
Churn proof.
Yeah. But they like it.
We haven't
so
had
much
any churn. So no customers have left.
That they don't run away because they see the value. Once you start using it, you see the value.
Mm-hmm. Right. But there's no accident that it's a 60 day. It's like, this is the funny thing where people, it's like,
no accident.
Everyone churns at the 3 month point. Okay, well, create an event that happens at the 3 month point that makes you not want to leave or that makes you want to stick around.
Because once they get it, the process now is 10 times faster when you use InBuild. So it's just getting them to understand how it works for the flip of the switch.
Right.
And then they're hooked.
Right.
Yeah. And they'll never leave. They love the process because it's just cross-reference and then it just flows from there through an automated workflow.
Right. Do you think that there's anyone on planet Earth that could have built this company besides you guys in the combination of your skill sets?
Potentially.
I don't think so.
There's always that potential, but like...
Yeah, who is it? Show it. Because think about it. This is like the beauty. This is the beauty of that amazing co-founder situation where you're just like, what? Like you guys had the perfect sort of match to pull this thing off. Because if, for instance, well, number one, you were quite literally forced in the same room to hang out with each other for a couple months. Yep. You weren't even this wasn't even an intentional sort of project. It just sort of came out through necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that's like those are where the diamonds come from, but it kind of is where the diamonds come from. Like if you find yourself, if you find yourself making your own solution, if you find yourself you know, having these aha moments, those are things that I think you really need to keep pressure on and pushing through. And
yeah,
it sounds like this
that's like the known unknowns, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know that you could be together, potentially living there, but the actual situation is entirely unknown to you. Mm-hmm. Right. Or like what happens in your future is so hard to determine.
Yeah.
Right. And that sometimes the stars align. I mean, I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I guess that could be a good way.
It feels good.
Also, like works being out. Same room, right?
Yeah.
So we were in the same room. It was just the two of us. We got our first couple customers. We got some engineers that were remote, and then we were a remote company, right?
Okay.
It's COVID. We started the company during COVID.
Yep.
It was normal to be a remote company.
Right.
Then what we really missed was when we were applying to Y Combinator, and once we got in, our partner, who's part of Y Combinator, she was saying that she brought her entire team to San Francisco. They were there working in the same house together for the 3-month program. And that it was like transformational for her and her team.
Hacker house.
Yeah. So that's what we ended up doing for YC. And it was like, it was a cool, like,
you guys contrast.
Yeah. We brought half the team in.
How many people was that at that point?
Four additional.
Yeah. At one point there was 8 of us in the house. And then for most of it was 6.
Why do you think it's so important to build in person?
Because it's this connection that you can't get over a Zoom call ever. And if you have a question, you can just look across the room and ask the question, or there's opportunity to like talk about more serious things as well. Or you can go down the street and take a walk, or like, just there's way more opportunity to brainstorm and make something really cool where you don't get that like connection like we're having right now.
Yeah.
Other than like when we were talking to you over Zoom call, it was kind of like, yeah, this is cool. I kind of get to know this guy, but then it's nothing then like gone. Being in it's person. Like, and then you're like, yeah, right. This is the way to do it.
I think what happens is when you're not supposed to be working, you're working. It's like when you're not attacking a head-on solution, it's like, oh, there's a solution. It's like your brain relaxes and then you happen to be with your colleague and you're like, oh, hey, so we're chilling and here's the greatest idea ever, you know, because it's almost like you get to play with your subconscious.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly when you're on a Zoom, you know, we're on a Zoom or a Google Meets, we're not playing in subconscious. We're playing in like rational, organize this meeting, see the logistics. Like, there is no room for just the flow. And before I sound like a yoga teacher, the flow, I think, is sometimes far, far more important and impactful than whatever the hell you're going to pull out of the meetings and the Zoom calls and all this organized, you know, stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, yeah. And it's also different. Like, there's some type of fatigue that you get from just being on Zoom calls, and it takes a while to warm up to people and actually get to know them. And I don't know if I've ever felt that from only knowing somebody from Zoom. There's still like that one missing piece that's hard to explain. That it's like, I don't really know you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at all the happy people on dating apps.
Sorry. It's just like,
God, had to say it. But here's the thing. We're so complex, right? So if reality is so complex, if your great idea goes to market and falls apart, there's some things that we don't understand and know, right? So how could it not be the same with other people? I mean, there's so many facets of ourselves that we don't even know about our own selves.
Yeah.
Right. So when you get into a room, I think you get to play around in that space. That's just a lot more interesting and exciting.
Yeah.
And you get the opportunity to have those aha moments, I think, a lot faster. I do the same thing. Like, I didn't do it until I started an agency like a couple years ago, and I had a remote team. We'd never met in person. We worked really well, and I was like, all right, we're all going to Miami. We're all doing a co-working thing. We're going to be in a meeting room for 2 days, and we have so many problems that we need to solve.
Yeah.
And we're going to solve all of them in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, all right, whatever. We're going to Miami. How bad could this be? You know? And we proceeded to solve everything in like a day and a half. And then we just went out to dinner. And I was like, sweet.
Yep.
That was cool.
Yep.
You know, it's like, wait, that's how people always used to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, if you ever go to a great city and look around, you're like, how does this exist? It's like, because people used to hang out with each other. That's my theory.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what happened in San Francisco. And then when everyone left, you could just see that it just degraded. Although being in YC in San Francisco, you are really tapped into the tech, and you do feel like the heartbeat of tech. But working in an industry that's not doing generative AI or whatever newest.
No shade. I didn't feel any shade right there. We're good. Yeah. I didn't feel any shade. Yeah.
It's challenging because your customers aren't there. So it's like, what do you choose? Do you want to be near the other tech bros that are also building things like you? Or do you want to be near your customers that actually understand what you're building and the pain points? So it's like trade-offs.
I mean, San Francisco is definitely the mecca for it, right? And it's a great place to be if you're raising money and also if you're building a company for other very technical folks. I think it's a great place to be. I mean, in general, it's a great place to be, but for individuals who have like SaaS solutions where your customers aren't in the area, makes sense. And we need to go all over the country to find our customers, right? So they're all over the place. But it just brought us closer together. And I mean, now we're going to try to get together more often. We went back to remote for a bit and we're going to see how often we can get together and like
make this value
click again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. We actually have one of our guys here today.
Yeah. What's up, man? Yeah, I like having folks on this side of the camera and on this side of the camera because it feels like you get to like say stuff like it's just great.
Yeah.
I like it this way.
Yeah.
No, I was so pleased that you guys, and now I'm not surprised that you bought into my "we don't shoot this virtual" thing. And, you know, people call me insane and they're like, "You're nuts. You have to be able to have a virtual setup." And I'm just like, well, not yet. Because the value that I get out of this is meeting you guys, connecting, hearing the story. That's the fun. I don't actually understand the story from a virtual perspective until I meet, you know, everyone in the room. So this is where my understanding comes from. And I have to believe if I'm understanding, then everyone who's listening is understanding a lot quicker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There were podcasts that I used to listen to and then watch, but then they went fully virtual and then I stopped watching them. So I don't know. That's kind of like very much what gave me the impression that definitely needed to do this in person was because I've had experience where I got turned off from the podcast because they stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you're like tripping over each other trying to talk and you don't really know. There's like that.
Yeah. There's lag.
Yeah,
exactly.
There's this phenomenon. Anyone who's like played in a band before, this is the reason why you can't drink and play a show as good as you can if you just don't drink. There's a little microsecond lag between you hearing yourself on stage. And when you're drinking, you know, you've got the tall boys on stage, that lag in your brain starts to grow and grow and grow where you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you sound like.
Yeah.
And I am convinced that that same phenomenon happens on an even more micro level with Zoom, with Google Meets. It's just like the feedback loop is there's a delay. And in that delay, you get tired. Yeah. In those micro, is he see that I'm smiling? You know, do they understand what I'm talking about? Why the fuck am I on this call? Like that is a fatiguing thing that happens.
Sure. Yep.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
A little hack, guys. That, you know, fellow tired people who don't like Zoom calls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I turn off my own view. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
I just started doing yourself. This. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Way better.
It supposedly your brain, like imagine your brain.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to look at a guy on a computer and believe he's real.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, I'm going to check myself out to make sure I'm not saying looking stupid, my face
cross-referencing,
and you're doing it all at once.
How am I looking?
Yeah. Dude, that is the definition of fatigue. After some of these calls, I have to sit down.
Mm-hmm. Then you're trying to actually get what the purpose is done too.
That's right.
Like, yeah.
Why are you even on it?
Like, yeah.
You know,
that's a good point. start doing that for sure.
We reached like the peak moment of virtual where everybody was like, virtual is better. And everyone's back to being like, virtual sucks.
It's terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, at least when it comes to rapidly making progress mm-hmm. on some really complex thing, mm-hmm. I don't think you can beat hanging out with people in a room with some coffee and just figuring it out. You know, ordering in some pizzas or subs, or depending on where you're from, it's either a sub, a hoagie, or a grinder. I know where you're from.
Burritos.
Yeah, okay, burritos. Dude, even better. Complete California move right there. Yeah. If you were doing this in New York and Jersey, there would just be like a huge Hogies. Sandwich that would show up. They call it a sub.
A sub.
Or I forgot one, a hero.
Hero?
So it's called the Italian hero.
Is that just what they call sub, you?
But that is what, that's what, which is my middle name as well.
The Italian hero.
A long sandwich has so many names, but.
What is it like to live in Miami and grow up in the East Coast in New York?
It's the same thing because we're all down there together with each other. It's basically
when you like people flock down there, you seasonally or
flock?
Yeah,
is that pointed? That was a backhanded compliment. I started to look the reason I landed in Miami was I just was like, sounds like a good idea. I went to Miami way before it was cool. It was still just weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was weird, but beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it was way cheaper. Way cheaper. So I was like, this is a great place to woodshop a business. I'm on the beach. It's cheap. It's like,
yeah.
And then what happened was I ended up meeting the whole thing about Miami before now is like it's the sunny place for shady people, right? South Florida. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like
makes sense.
Everyone you meet is a crook of some
Miami Vice or
seen those. Doing some bad boy stuff down there. And so, of course, I came in with that sort of mindset. You know, I'd only gone down there to party when I was working on Wall Street. You go down to party and you come back and that's kind of what you do, right?
Yeah.
I get down there and I get introduced to probably two of the coolest guys I've ever met. Like independent entrepreneurs completely marching to the beat of their own drum. Like I had never met people like this before. And I was just so fortunate, and that's what kept me in Miami. You know, I had my new buddies. They were very different than my buddies from Wall Street. They just did things differently because the Wall Street guys were doing it for the company, doing it for the raise, doing it for the promotion, you know, pitching JP against Goldman to get the, you know, like it was gamesmanship, and that's how you made money. In South Florida, guess what? You don't have a choice. Yeah. You better think of something fast or you're not going to be you know, popping the ace of spades with Rick Ross in the club like you want to on Saturday night. Right. So I met these guys who were just building things from scratch.
So the hustle level is higher.
Glad you use that. Yeah. Because I've written on this, I call it the New York MBA versus the Miami Hustler. Because I think these paradigms are really important. And I haven't, again, like my exposure to the West Coast is awfully limited. Otherwise, I'd probably have a character to go on the West Coast as well. Yeah, don't feel left out, guys. But the New York MBA is a different outlook than the Miami Hustler, because the Miami Hustler had no pedigree, had no track.
Yeah.
There was no partner track. You're like, I'm down here in the middle of basically nowhere. I'm at the tip of the state of Florida, hanging out. It's sunny, it's beautiful, but there's nothing endemic to the economy that you would think of like a New York or LA. Like,
and you got to figure it out as you go. It's one of those things that like you don't know necessarily that, and you haven't been given that like MBA type of teaching where there might be some sort of bad habits there that they haven't like refined enough, right? Because it's old ways of teaching where like a hustler is going to figure out stuff on their own and have to get past the challenging things.
Their own way. Their own way.
Previous. A new way, a different way.
A new way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that to me was refreshing. I also, for the first time, saw people that just like did things for them that was like really, they like took care of themselves. Cause like in New York, the thought of like doing something that would improve your public speaking, for instance.
Yeah.
You'd be like, all right, dude, what are you like trying to impress somebody? Like being a weirdo dork, like. And then I met these guys and they're like, oh, hey, I've got this meeting to go to. I'm like, where you going, bro? Got a little secret meeting? He's like, no, don't worry about it. I go, where are you going, bro? He's like, I go to this public speaking course on Thursdays. That is the coolest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
You take time out of your day to get better at something and you're not like that. That blew my mind. I know you guys are like, we do that shit all the time, but it blew my mind. I didn't know that people did things like that.
Yeah.
Because my whole life was go to the fancy school, get the degree, get the fancy job, mm-hmm. and then live on that. Like phone it in.
Yeah.
Secretly.
For sure.
But live on the image.
Yep.
And here, or not here, we're in LA for God's sakes, but it is a whole different story. Talk about image.
Yeah, right.
No, in South Florida, it was like, there is no, it's like either make a lot of money and live a cool life and build a sweet company that you own. And so I saw entrepreneurship in a really gritty way.
Yep.
And that's really how I got hooked. And I was able to build some cool businesses where I would have never been able to build it without having that in person.
Right.
Contact with the real folks that I met down there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's kind of the same in San Francisco too. And when Y Combinator does find those like really hustlers and you know, even though if they just have an idea, like you can see that these other companies that come out of YC, that's why like they're the best accelerator because they really force you to grind quickly. And to make progress on a short time frame. Mm-hmm. And
it's nice to give yourself those limits.
Yeah. Yeah. And have the restriction because it's a lot easier when you're trying to hustle, but then there's the distractions. And I bet in Miami and down here in LA, it's nice and beautiful out and you want to go out and
yeah.
But when you need to grind, like it's good to be around those types of people that also are grinders.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're looking around you and going, what is everyone doing? Oh, everyone's working really hard. I guess I'll work really hard. Right. It's a nice way mm-hmm. to trick yourself.
But it must be different than in New York because they're also working really hard, but maybe a different type of work.
I don't know. This is a hot take. What I'm about to say, guys, this is a hot take.
Got him.
It's a hot take. I think there's a lot of people that like to make the pageant of working hard. I'm going to show you how hard I work, but how much are you moving the needle? Because when you don't have, you know, what is this Jocko extreme ownership, yep. like when you do in a startup,
mm-hmm.
There's a flimsy connection to your hard work and what actually happens on the other end of the transaction. Right. Like if you guys just don't show up for 2-3 weeks, what happens to the inbuild?
Dies.
Bad.
Very bad.
It's not good.
So there's extreme ownership there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a huge, I mean, if you want to get all nerd out on Nicholas Nassim Taleb, but I'm just like a big fan of his because he's just like, he just like lauds like construction workers and like wrestlers and like rough people because they have contact with their work.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like people that like do shit, right? And he's very publicly like he just hates the middlemaning and like this rent collecting behavior, meaning wedging yourself and charging a fee. And that idea really, you know, that really grew on me over time. And once you start to see that, so I'm a champion for entrepreneurs. I'm a champion for entrepreneurs of all levels. I'm a champion of people that fucking fight with their bare hands to get what they want. And I'm a champion of people that take risks, whether it works out or it doesn't.
Definitely. That's the biggest thing. I think just being able to take that risk and go for it and spend your hard earned money on something that you're certain will work out. It's just going to be a long, long haul.
Yeah.
And taking all those risks all the time is part of it, right? Cause you don't get to that success or that level of success without taking those extremely potentially challenging risks where you're like, not sure if we can make it through that quickly, but we'll grind through to get through it.
And that's what drives us with our customers.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they work with all of these mini entrepreneurs that they just started their own drywall company.
Mm.
And it's just him and his brother. And they're going around and doing all the drywall in this house. And they're just so excited that they landed this job And then when they invoice our clients, like, we want to make sure that they get paid as fast as possible because we know how long it can take for the whole process to go through of getting the right approvals from the project managers, the owners finally getting paid, doing lien waivers and everything else. That's just terrible in the industry. And then finally the drywaller and his brother get paid like 30, 60 days later.
Whew.
So it's really like, yeah, I mean, one day InBuild will be able to pay that drywaller right when he submits the invoice and it's approved. And like, we want to be able to cut that time down from 2 months to like 2 days.
So there's another winner here. It's the small businesses and the subcontractors that come in and build these projects. And they could be enormous or they could be like Joe and his brother, the drywall guy.
Yeah, exactly.
His name isn't Joe.
Yeah. And there's tons of Joes out there that work on these like huge multi-million dollar homes just where our clients are building mansions.
Right.
But like, the construction industry in general has a lot of entrepreneurs, but they're not really seen when the entrepreneurs that are tech bros, they're the ones in the spotlight. But these guys are also out there like busting their ass and working really hard to grow their business.
Sure. What would you say would be your top three tips? I want three and I want three to pull this whole thing off that you guys are in the process of building and pulling off. What are your top three tips for an entrepreneur?
Number one, we were at a YC event and talking to Brian with Airbnb, and he was saying, get so close to your customers that they feel like they have to get a restraining order off. Mm. So like last night, me and Zach, we were working with a customer and she was having a problem, and I called her and it was 10:30 at night, and like so close that she's just before she goes to bed, we're talking to the customer. So get, know them, know the ins and outs of them, because that's how you can build a product that they love, because that's what matters. Number two is find really, really good people to be on your team, because it's so important that one, like we're both going on vacation next week, that we can step away from the business. I mean, we haven't gone on vacation since we started the business. And now we're at a place where we feel we can actually step away and our team's got it. Like, find those people. And it takes a lot of time, and spend a lot of time interviewing people. Don't rush that process. When you get to the place of hiring, really, really have confidence that these people, because it's a lot easier to hire somebody than it is to fire somebody. And when you do that, once you start firing people, like you understand it, even though it's hard. But if you can't find the right people in your company, it's just not going to work, because it's all relying on you. And then the third one is just really have conviction in what you're doing. And that brought to light, like we already are beating it with it, over a dead horse from the conversation of YC and the pivot hell, but they didn't have the conviction of what they were building. It was more just like, oh, I have an idea that like, this is something that.
Is it conviction or is it passion for the idea?
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta love it, but you also gotta know that other people love it.
Cause it doesn't matter if just you love it.
No. Nope. Yeah.
And that's where the conviction part comes in. Like, I know that other people love this idea, even though I love it the most. Other people also love it.
I felt that was a good moment. Yeah. I felt the warmth, felt the love on that one. No, that's awesome. Any more tips?
Oh yeah.
You're a young hustler. You're going out in the wild. What are your tips?
Be so annoying that people know you're there, but know that you have a good product that you have an understanding that a customer will buy it one day. Even if they say no today, never take the first no as a solid no. Like, you're going to take so many no's being an entrepreneur that you can never stop getting to yes. Mm. Right. So don't take a no as a no. That's like what I've always done. I've never been like, oh, that's the first no you've gotten. But no, it's not actually a no. It's going to be a yes eventually. Right. So just making sure that those no's, you know, are just part of the process. and building a culture of longevity and building a culture of people who actually give a shit about what you're doing, right? Because the team we've built is all very important to building a company, right? Because me and Ty, you can do it with two co-founders for a while, but it doesn't work that long. You have to add employees to grow a good company, right? And culture is one of the biggest things about that, right? Like, have employees that care about your customers, try to find the solution, will spend way more hours than you ask of them to do stuff and get things done. So culture is like a huge thing for us. And I think that's very important for most companies, right? And last thing is, like, you can have the best software in the world, you can have the coolest tech in ever, but if you don't have something that your customers will enjoy using, it's kind of just an idea. And it's kind of like, yeah, I can have like the coolest MVP in the world, but if it's not something that's viable and makes your customers' lives easier, then there's probably a better option and a better place where you can spend your time, like,
right,
building something.
Right.
And then I think another aspect is having really good advisors, right? It's like,
wait, I only said three. This
mentors and advisors are like a big thing for sure.
And how did you guys find your early mentors?
It was very organic.
It all just kind of
we were actually trying to map it all out because one of the project managers that I used to work with, Ryan, he knew somebody who used to be in the VC world, work with a ton of startups, and introduced us.
Someone had been through the jungle before.
Yeah. And then he introduced us to someone else that she introduced us to a third person. And then we got one more intro, and down this chain, after just like intro, we finally found somebody that like jived with us.
And then a really good family friend of ours, who's like my older brother, I went to college with him and stuff. He started a company and sold his company. So he was one of our early advisors too. He kind of helped us like get our heads around the idea and like where to actually like start, because really it's like you start at one point, right? You're like, all right, we're ready to go. Mm. Let's go. Mm. And then you have to figure out everything after that. Like weekly, you're like, oh shit, what do we do now? Like, where are we? We're getting to this stage. There's a next step, but we have to figure out exactly what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So we would rely on folks who've kind of been through it, like you were saying, in the jungle, to kind of like orient you and put you in the right direction, not necessarily like give you the answers, mm-hmm, because everything's different, right? Every situation.
There are no answers. Yeah. Sorry, guys. There are no answers.
Right.
Yeah.
So aligning you and like sending you in the right trajectory to make the right decisions. And you'll make wrong decisions too. But I think, yeah, organically very much so, like just by knowing people and letting it happen and not like forcing it and going out and like hiring advisors. I don't think that's highly recommended, but
yeah.
If someone emails you that they can be your mentor, like,
yeah, unless it's me,
unless it's you, yeah.
Anyone else, exactly. Fuck those guys. Yeah. I mean, and I'm going to throw this idea out there, a mentor that's from your network,
yeah,
that you trust,
mm-hmm,
they show you that it's possible to get done. Like, they're the guy that's like, no, I know this sounds impossible, but I did it. So, yeah. And when I was doing it, I had no idea how to pull it off, just like you guys didn't know how to pull it off. And mm-hmm, I turned out okay.
And yeah,
your buddy, a couple hundred, I don't know, millions of dollars probably entered his pocket at some point, I'm just guessing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
still don't know the answer. Never found out, but you know,
exactly.
Keep that one.
Yeah.
You know, close, you know it's a lot when you don't know.
You know it's, yeah. Whenever anyone's like, I can't tell you, you're like, it's 100, over 100.
Yeah, you just want to know.
It's actually way more baller never to tell anyone,
yeah,
how much money you made.
Yep.
Because it's just a mystery. And yeah, in your own brain, it keeps getting bigger and bigger every day.
Yeah.
Or I think of like pro poker players.
Right.
They're like, show the card. They're like, nope,
no,
never show the card. Just, you never show the card.
Love it.
Get to that point. Yeah.
So guys, look, I love that we busted our butts to do this in person. We tried to, one city failed. We didn't let it stop us. You guys are awesome. I love to hear yet again, another impossible tale,
yes,
of combining disparate skill sets, personalities, put them together in a room and you come up with something beautiful and awesome. And then you guys have enough guts to go and shop it around to customers.
Oh, yeah.
And in that little gritty kind of way is how you get things done.
That's right.
So InBuild, another example of a unique corner of the world where you guys are creating value and you're making people happy. And, you know, you're saving so many headaches for so many administrative people and builders. Oh, yeah. And you got to love it, guys. So I appreciate you coming on and see you soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Cheers.